I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 2nd, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the attendance by roll.
Hanson, Rick,
present.
Hanson present. Waslewick, Amy.
Waslewick present.
Waslewick present. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman present.
Acorn, Patty.
Acorn present.
Acorn present. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland present.
Ackland present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer present.
Ackland, Rob.
Present.
Ackland present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher present.
Fisher present. Green, Steve.
Green present.
Green present. Igo, Spencer.
Igo present.
Igo present. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan present.
Jordan present. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. Lee, Fu.
Lee present.
Lee present. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick present.
Lewick present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison present.
Morrison present. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Tice, Tama.
Tice present.
Tice present.
The quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for Thursday, January 28th, 2021.
Move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman moves the minutes for January 28th, 2021. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. The first item of business today is an overview from the Minnesota Conservation Corps, or the Conservation Corps of Minnesota and Iowa. And we have Mark Murphy, the Executive Director, and Hollis Emery, the Program Director, here to present. This will take about 20 minutes, members, and then we will get to the bill. So, Mr. Murphy.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to be in front of the committee again. I was here a couple years ago, fresh into my seat, so I was a little bit green around the ears. No pun intended there.
If you could just state your name and position for the record.
So. Yes, Mark Murphy, Executive Director, Conservation Corps. And would you like Hollis to state her name at this time, too?
Yes, please.
Hollis Emery, Program Director for Youth and Individual Placement Programs.
Welcome. Proceed.
Terrific. We're thrilled to be here today. It's an honor to be here. We thank the committee for inviting us. Hollis will be speaking briefly about our programs, but I want to begin with a very brief overview for some of those who may be new to the committee. The Conservation Corps has a very rich history, 20-year history as a nonprofit, but its history dates back even to the 30s of the time of the Civilian Conservation Corps. For many years, different variations of the Conservation Corps existed within the Department of Natural Resources here in Minnesota. Many Minnesotans and young people and their parents are aware of the Conservation Corps through our program, our summer youth program that's been around since 1985. So we have a long history. Today, I'll bring up my slides, share my slides. Just confirming that you can see my slides on the screen. Yeah, thank you. Today, we have a mission to engage youth and young adults in meaningful service, leadership development, and environmental stewardship. Since we last met 2 years ago, our committee, our board, developed a new strategic framework, and we have added a vision that talks very succinctly about what we seek to achieve, our long-term vision, which is very relevant to today's challenges that we see in our communities and that we see in the outdoors, that we see in natural resources. A world where everyone has equitable access to nature, where they are equipped to succeed in career and life, and is empowered to make a difference in conserving natural resources. Our programs serve 18 to 25-year-olds. My colleague is going to talk about it. She's the director of youth and individual placement programs, but she will give you an overview of a brief overview of our programs and some of the accomplishments we've made over the last 2 years with your funding. Hollis?
Ms. Emery, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members, for your time. I'm here to talk a little bit about our impact last year. A common theme of our programs is environmental stewardship and work readiness. And so to the point of environmental stewardship, we together, our AmeriCorps members, our youth, completed over 59,000 acres improved and restored. So that's going to include habitat restoration, work that may include prescribed burns. We do invasive species removal and really work on quite a bit of rain garden installation in the vein of protecting our water quality. We improved or constructed over 3,000 miles of trails. So a very important aspect of our work is improving and the access to recreation here in the state of Minnesota. And then you can see that we completed over 10,000 hours of surveying and data collection. And this is going to include acres mapped, surveys that help our land managers make more informed decisions. And we planted over 100,000 trees and shrubs. In terms of the work readiness piece, we engaged over 714 members over the course of those 2 years. So that's over almost 600,000 hours of service that our program has facilitated. And close to 81% of our participants feel better prepared for their next position. 89% have developed those workforce readiness skills. I think, Mark, you could move. So this shows some of those activities that I've discussed, just in a bit of a breakdown to show. Habitat improvement is really a large part of what we do. And you can see the trails and waterways, that improvement of access to outdoor recreation. I'd also point out that our crews are prepared to respond to emergencies, natural disasters. And so from time to time, our crews will be deployed. While the majority of our service takes place right here in Minnesota, we are prepared to deploy throughout the country to respond to emergency services. And that's part of, emergency needs. And that's a really important part of AmeriCorps, of which our program is part. We've talked about workforce readiness, and at least 20% of our members' time is really focused on training. And so that does include the technical skills training, but we also focus on activities meant to increase members' awareness of things like the legislative process, encouraging them to be more engaged as members of their community, and we prepare them for their next career as well. I'll touch briefly on how we accomplish these things. So to incorporate all of this, we have kind of five areas of programming that I'm going to touch on briefly. We have our field crew program. Our field crew program engages AmeriCorps members. AmeriCorps is a national service organization. We take that spirit of national service and apply it directly, locally here in our communities in Minnesota. Our members are between the ages of 18 and 25, and they serve basically year-round. We have opportunities starting right now in February. We're welcoming our crew leaders this week through mid-December, and they are the ones completing the habitat restoration, working on the trails, doing community outreach, potentially deploying for emergency response. Our individual placement program places members directly with nonprofits or government agencies. So they're still completing natural resource projects, but perhaps with a little bit more specific focus. And so that's where you might see more of their activity focused on survey and data collection. They often really hone in on a particular activity like mapping, like planning. We have our Youth Outdoors program. Our AmeriCorps members engage in all of these activities, in habitat restoration, in trail work, and they do that as groups of young adults, but they also engage high school students. So currently we do this primarily in the Twin Cities. We think it's a model that could be replicated elsewhere. And high school students come to us for what is often their first job, particularly in the spring and the fall. And it's an opportunity for them to learn these skills, explore careers in really anything, but particularly in the environmental sector. And so our youth members are also contributing to what you see here in front of you in terms of our impact. Our Summer Youth Corps program operates similarly. We have AmeriCorps members who are serving as leaders, and we welcome high school students from throughout the state of Minnesota to our program for a summer of trail work, of invasive species removal, and personal development in building their teamwork skills, getting ready for what's next for them. And we kind of help identify next career opportunities and college opportunities. Again, our youth are, those youth members are contributing directly to the habitat restoration, the trail work that you see in front of you. And then finally, I'll mention our Increasing Diversity in Environmental Careers program. This is a partnership with the Department of Natural Resources, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And while our other programs engage AmeriCorps members who are typically out of high school or college, and our youth programs that engage high school students, the Increasing Diversity in Environmental Careers program intentionally engages current college students with the idea of offering advanced preparation for a career in natural resources, particularly for students who are represent communities that are typically underrepresented in the field of natural resources. So women, people of color, people with disabilities. And that concludes my overview of our programs and their impact.
We have several questions. Mr. Murphy, should we, did you have more?
Yeah, we're gonna just cover through the finances a little bit and then we'll take those questions. Is that good, Mr. Chair?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. Financially, you're looking at our 2020 results, and they're not audited yet. We're looking at our audit done in a couple months. But we're sound despite the challenges of COVID over the last year. 2 years ago, we showed up at the committee. We had an operating budget of around $9.5 to $10 million. Today, we're more around $8 million. And those cuts are mostly due to really rigid cost cuts over the last couple of years to try to manage the fact that we have real capacity issues around recruitment. Recruiting young people to take 11 months off is a much more difficult challenge, and was in an economy that was thriving, and now so it is a different environment. Our fundamentals, though, are pretty much the same. About 10 to 12% of our budget comes from the state. We're up to 14% this year, as the pie chart shows, because we have this diversity program that Hollis was speaking about that is passing for scholarships and fellowships for the students that are involved. We still get about 15% of our budget from the federal government through the AmeriCorps program, but the lion's share of our support comes through fee-for-service. On the expense side, our costs are still largely staff and personnel, I should say. The cost of the Corps members and the youth members that serve, again this year, because we had to suspend our operations for a period of time last spring when COVID was just getting started, and we had to pause our youth programs this last year. Our core member costs are down a little bit this last year. but they remain on average about 35 to 37% of our cost. Direct program, 20%. The big change there was probably this year that we're added COVID costs, transportation costs were up because we couldn't pile all our crews in the same vehicles. We had to really branch out and have more vehicles to distribute. But we were able to be operational all year long, except for that suspension in the spring. And we were able to operate primarily COVID safe. We did have some members out because of COVID, but we had strict protocols in place to manage and mitigate those risks. From a probation side, we're here really because we want to get continued support for the really critical annual operating we get from you per year or on a biennial basis, and the natural resource dedicated funds dollars that we get for doing dedicated work on motorized, non-motorized trails in parks and forests. And then we're, of course, thankful to the legislature where their support comes to the legacy amendment funds to fund partners like the DNR and Bowser to support project work within their regions on a contract basis with us through our fee-for-service program. And finally, I just want to call out, as we look forward, there are themes that we think we'd love to be in partnership with the legislature and the agencies that we work with in terms of the challenges that we face. Certainly ensuring our operations resiliency this COVID year as we go through the pandemic and hopefully see a brighter day by the spring or the summer. And we are able to mitigate any additional risks and exposure there. Recruitment, I talked about it last time, it continues to be a challenge addressing the barriers that we have to attracting students to come in, young people to come in and participate. We have an increased effort in trying to reach out to underrepresented communities and, quite frankly, taking volunteer service, community service at a stipend of about $1,400 a month off for 11 months is quite a barrier when you consider housing costs and transportation costs and other things to try to attract those people to come to our program. So we continue to work against those, but it is challenging. Our efforts to advance are what we call JEDI work, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. The issues in our communities that were highlighted this year are just as strong inside our organization to look at how do we reach out, how do we build partnerships, and how to attract more people from different backgrounds. We have to continue to meet our partner demands. Our partner demands are not going down. As we have capacity issues, our partner demands are up. The DNR, the agencies are coming to us. They have had COVID impacts, so they'd like our services to help fill in where they've had COVID impacts on personnel. The changing climate in terms of invasive species and other things that are making for more work in the parks. There's deferred maintenance that our partners can't get to. And there's just the jobs and internships that they often offer their temporary and seasonal workers. We're an attractive resource for them to fill in some gaps that they haven't been able to meet over the last year. And finally, we're working to try to build new partnerships so we can enhance the programs that we do offer and the service that we do offer. And with that, I'd like to say we're open to any questions.
Thank you. We have several questions. Representative Akam, then Representative Keeler, and then Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I will just say I am a former Minnesota Conservation Corps alumni. Both my husband and I worked for the Conservation Corps back in the early and mid-90s. I will say I planted a whole lot of trees, and I learned how to build log shelters and run chainsaw, and I responded to wildland firefighting, and I responded. We spent weeks fighting the Red River flood going north from Fargo. So it shaped all of who I am. I can't speak more honestly and from the heart about what a great program it is. I just wanted to commend you for your efforts to want to work on your recruitment and wanting to remove barriers for involvement. I think that it's while it never paid a lot of money, it
it offered so much to the people that participated, and the college awards were just a really wonderful way to help people have better access to college as well. And so just wondering, are you working with colleges, especially those that have environmental or natural resource-based programs, to work on your recruitment, or through environmental clubs and high schools? I just, like I said, can't speak better about the program and would love to see as many people participate.
Mr. Murphy or Ms. Emery?
Hollis, why don't, since you're our recruitment director, oversee our recruitment, why don't you go ahead with that?
Ms. Emery.
Chair Hansen, Representative Acom, yes, absolutely. We are very involved with as many colleges and universities and high schools that we can think of, always looking for new connections, but we have worked very hard to identify those programs that are, I think, a particularly good fit in terms of, as you identified, environmental clubs, majors, but really reaching out. I myself am an alum, and I majored in political science and English, so I think there's room there too, and we are always looking to make those connections, and really both for people getting ready to go to college with the Education Award, as you mentioned, and then working with the recent graduates to connect their educational experience to hands-on experience.
Representative Acom.
Thank you.
If we could get those job notifications or job postings, we could post them on the website, and members can help get them out to their constituents as well. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always love when we talk about our youth and getting youth involved. I also really love when we talk about breaking down barriers. I have a couple questions. They're kind of just clarifying questions, and then I'll have a follow-up to it. But when you talked about your youth programming, you mentioned that it's mostly focused on metro area. First question is, what's the age group when you talk about? Is this like freshmen and up? Is it seniors and up? And then why is it just the metro? I'm from Greater Minnesota, and I can tell you that we have a lot of difference in our environmental needs, and I have a lot of students who would be engaged in this. Is it a financial barrier? Or why are we not reaching out a little bit more to our Greater Minnesota when we want to be more inclusive in our thought process? It's not just around our race and our gender. It's also around our geographic area. So that'd be my first question, if somebody wants to answer that. And then I do have a follow-up.
Ms. Emery.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Keeler. I should clarify, we have two youth programs, Summer Youth Corps and Youth Outdoors. Summer Youth Corps is very intentionally open to youth from throughout the state of Minnesota. So we do recruit, I think, as heavily as we can and intentionally from all communities, including absolutely Greater Minnesota. The program that is currently metro-based is Youth Outdoors, which engages youth in after school. I think that the program has been around for a number of years. We are actively working with our regional managers to assess the needs and the interests of communities outside of the metro for that after school piece, as well as looking at our summer youth corps program is residential. So youth will join us in a typical non-COVID year. We bring everybody together. And looking at, that's great for some youth. For some youth, maybe being away from home for the summer is not a great option, but they're still looking for some employment. So I would say that we are actively looking for ways to better serve needs and would absolutely welcome additional conversation and discussion.
Representative Keeler.
Yep. So with the age range, that's freshmen and up. I guess I didn't get that part answered.
Ms. Emery.
Thank you. The age range is between the ages of 15 and 18 for our youth participants.
Representative Keeler.
Yep. So one follow-up to that, you talk about recruitment, you talk about engagement, and you want to reach the underserved population, which I already said I really appreciate, but that engagement has to start before age 15. And a lot of this formula of like reach out and come to us is not sufficient to our underserved population. So I would just really encourage you, one, to look at how we're starting even younger than that. We see disparities in education starting as early as third grade. And so we know that by the time they get to college, we don't have as much of a diverse population in higher ed. So I would really encourage you to start working with even like our early childhood stuff. How do you do, you know, moving playgrounds, moving things that travel around the state to engage, and then rethink the process of always having programmings that are reaching out to come to us, because it's not easy for some of us to travel or to bring our kids or to always come to the cities for things. That I would really advocate for having some of these resources brought out to us in greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Murphy and Ms. Emery, for the presentation and your time today and your work, too. So I'm always thinking about ways that we can partner to be responding to climate change as aggressively as possible. And I know young people I talk to are really engaged in responding to climate and want to be active. And so I'm very appreciative to see from Representative Akam, too, about the number of trees and shrubs that you've planted. I believe I saw you planted 117,000 trees and shrubs. I'm of the view that we need to be planting as many trees and shrubs as possible. We really need to accelerate that. So I'm curious what it would take for Conservation Corps in people and in funds to plant, say, 1 million trees a year to, you know, increase that tenfold. What would you need to be able to do that?
Mr. Murphy?
Yes, I'll take a stab at that. Well, our tree planting and shrub work is driven partly by what our project partners have required for us to do. So we work with, for example, Three Rivers Park District. We work with Minneapolis Mississippi Park Connection. We work with DNR regional staff all around the state and state parks. And we do, habitat maintenance and tree work in all those settings based on their needs and their desires. We partner with a number of nonprofits on those tree plantings. We work with those nonprofits on volunteer tree plantings. To increase that would require us to speak with a collaborative group of partners who would be interested in doing that, whether it's Metro, and I love what the previous representative was saying about make sure we get to out to greater Minnesota, out of the cities. So we could come back to, but many people have talked to us about 1 million tree initiative, and we would love to be part of that in conjunction with the partnership we work with already.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Murphy, for that. So it sounds like we need to keep talking about that with as many folks as possible to bring as many groups on board to be able to accelerate this efforts for tree planting. So excited to work on that with you.
Mr. Chair, may I just
Mr. Murphy.
Yes, we are already working with a partner, Serve Minnesota, which is the AmeriCorps partner here, has developed a forestry, community forestry position that we're talking to them about, so develop more opportunities for young people to be involved in forestry, in the kind of individual placement positions that Hollis mentioned earlier. There's also just an announcement last week in the executive order announced by President Biden about the development of a climate corps, a conservation climate corps, civilian conservation corps. So there is certainly a lot of interest and initiative, and we're anxious to be part of those conversations.
Is that it, Representative Lippert?
That's it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Igo, and I thought I saw Representative Heintzman, but maybe that was a phantom hand. It's disappeared again. So Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually going to follow up with what you're kind of already saying, Mr. Murphy, and that's in regard to just can you go in a little bit deeper about the nonprofits that you work with? Because I know up in my house seat up in Grand Rapids, I know a little bit about the work that you guys do over in the Bemidji area. But I guess I'm more curious to know about, you know, the other stuff that you're working on here in the Northland as well as greater Minnesota as a whole.
Mr. Murphy.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We work with in any one year, we work with about 150 to 170 different partners. Many of those partners are embedded in the agencies like DNR, MPCA, Bowser. We also work with soil and water districts. We work with some cities like the Park District in Duluth or in Minneapolis or in St. Paul or in Rochester. Nonprofits, we work with a lot around the metro, like Metro Blooms. The Nature Conservancy is somebody we work with statewide. Our partnerships with nonprofits depend on work that they have that they essentially contract with us. It's often funded through legacy funds or other resources that they get. Some of it may be volunteer funds. I would say that about of the 150 partners we have a year, I would say maybe 10 to 15% are nonprofits, and many of the rest fall into state, local, you know, agencies. And statewide and in northern Minnesota, a lot of the work that we're doing is linked to the district staff of the DNR and those agencies serving them up there, the forestry department on wildfire issues. So it's very linked to the DNR work we do.
Representative Igo?
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. Murphy. Yeah, like, and thank you for going into depth on that a little bit more. You know, one of the projects I guess I was hoping to learn a bit more about is when you had over in Bemidji, the Conservation Corps worked with a nonprofit food shelf, and the project was to put food, you know, in that food shelf. And I thought that was a great idea. So, you know, any way to incentivize that kind of work that you guys do, I thought that was great for our rural communities, putting fresh produce on the table for those in need in our communities. So thank you.
Yes.
Representative Lee. Final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Murphy. When you're talking about your partnership with other units of government, I'm curious to know what is the relationship between the work that you're doing and possibly some of these local units of government participating in the bonding dollars that we put in, specifically in October, we put in, I believe, $1 million for the Shady Tree Program. I'm just curious, are you receiving some of these benefits through the partnership that you have?
Mr. Murphy.
I would say I'm not aware of it, but Hollis is working with some contracted partners that may be. So, Hollis, do you have any knowledge?
Ms. Emery.
Thank you. I would say not directly. In terms of receiving the funds. However, we do work with a number of local government units. I'll say, you know, right here, for my part in sitting here in St. Paul, we work with St. Paul Parks and Rec. We work with the Minneapolis Park Board, Dakota County Parks and Rec. So it's potentially possible that some of those units receive some funding and then choose to work with our crews to implement the work. And I think we would just need to kind of follow up with them to see what if there's a direct connection. But our local government units frequently put together a variety of funding sources in order to work with our crews to get the project work completed.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just closing a comment, just wanted to encourage you to, you know, definitely reach out to the local units of government and see what can you do. We know that we're putting in bonding dollars for a tree planting program and whatnot, and I think that this is definitely something that our youth, the youth that you're working with, you know, throughout the state that could actually participate in. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Murphy and Ms. Emery. Good presentation, and we'll continue to look at this priority item. So thank you and the people that you work with. Share our thanks out to everybody. And if you can get us those job notices, we can maybe help do some recruiting.
We're happy to do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much to you and the committee for having us. We enjoy doing this and welcome us back. Ask us to come back anytime you have questions. So thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you. And with that, I'll hand the virtual gavel over to Representative Wozlawick, and we will take up House File 151.
Thank you, Chair Hanson. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 151 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Chair Hanson has moved that House File 151 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hanson, two-year bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill is the 2021 LCCMR recommendations, the Legislative and Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources, and it includes 88 projects totaling $70.88 million in FY22 from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. I have the Executive Director, Ms. Becca Nash, here to do a walk through the bill and answer any questions. Ms. Nash.
Ms. Nash, if you would identify yourself for the record, and then you can walk us through the bill.
Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. I'm Becca Nash, and I'm the Director of the LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is a permanent fund in the state treasury that was created through constitutional amendment to support activities that protect, conserve, preserve, and enhance Minnesota's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. It's funded with 40% of the annual proceeds from the Minnesota State Lottery, as well as income generated from investments managed by the State Board of Investment. LCCMR is responsible for making recommendations to the legislature on how ENRTF dollars are spent, and then for conducting oversight of those approved projects and their associated expenditures. The LCCMR is made up of 17 members, 5 senators, 5 representatives, and 7 citizens, and it's supported by nonpartisan staff, including Michael Varian, Corey Layfield, Roy Anderson, Diana Griffith, and me. The amount that is available for annual spending per the Constitution is up to 5.5% of the value of the fund on June 30th of the even year before the start of the biennium. So the amount that's available for fiscal year 22 and 23 is $70,881,000. The projects that are before you today are the result of a multi-stage competitive process. In response to our 2021 RFP, we received 329 proposals, requesting approximately $240,000. From that, 101 proposals were invited to present to the commission. We had 5 days of proposals, and from that group, 88 projects were recommended and included in the bill you see today. So we've included in your packet some pie charts that show the breakdown of the recommended projects based on the priority area, the proposer affiliation, and the geographic area of interest of impact. We had 7 priority areas for funding this year, and each of them have their own subdivision, so I'll go through those fairly briefly. Again, as Representative Hansen said, there are 88 projects totaling $70,881,000. In subdivision 3, that is the foundational natural resource data and information priority area, and that is $10,459,000. There are about 14 projects in that category. Subdivision 4 is water resources, and that's comprised of $4,771,000 for 10 projects. Subdivision 5 includes environmental education projects, totaling $2,687,000. Subdivision 6 is aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, $6,148,000 for 7 projects. Subdivision 7 is air quality, climate change, and renewable energy. This is $6,205,000 for 6 projects. Subdivision 8 is methods to protect or restore land, water, and habitat. This is $6,429,000 for 18 projects. Subdivision 9 is land acquisition, habitat, and recreation. This is $32,062,000 for 22 projects. And then Subdivision 10 is administrative and emerging issues. This is $2,120,000 for recommendations. Subdivisions 11 through 17 are conditions of funding that typically get included every year. One of those that's notable, I guess, for the conversation today is the requirement that any restoration or enhancement projects take into consideration contracting with the Minnesota Conservation Corps to do their work. Subdivision 18 is a carry forward section, and this is providing COVID-related extensions for any projects that otherwise would be expiring in June 2021. And this sets out the steps that need to be taken in order for that extension to be put in effect. And this is very similar to the COVID extensions that we passed last legislative session for projects expiring in 2020. I think that covers it for me, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Members, do we have questions? I see one so far. Representative Green, do you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I do have a few of those. I can go through the whole bill. I have questions on all the bill, but I don't think we have that kind of time. But I would like to touch on a couple of things just out of my curiosity. On page 15.1, and I'm going to try to not look at my computer because it's too hard to page down through, so I'm going to go off my notes. So if I mess up, you'll have to bear with me. The air quality and on 15.1, is there any advancement in this area now, or are you starting from scratch?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, are you referring to the whole category of air quality, or is there a specific project you're referring to?
Representative Green.
Well, we can go with this. Excuse me, Madam Chair. If we can go with this specific project there, and I'll just go right down the list. You're looking at for money for Duluth, and it's a heat exchanger for the buildings and the foundation. That's to improve efficiency. Do you have that kind of heat exchanger is what I'm asking basically. Do you have the heat exchanger there, or are you starting new? Because it looks like you're starting something here off of maybe a theory or a plan.
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, my understanding is that this is optimizing an existing technology, and it is making it more cost-effective for implementation in residential structures.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that's my question then. Do you have a plan? Is there something in place right now that you know where you're going, or are you just starting from scratch on this?
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, I believe they are starting with an existing technology, and they have steps that they want to test in order to improve and optimize it. And again, to bring the cost down so that it can be more people can be using it. It can be more accessible to more people.
Representative Green.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I know sometimes I sound like I'm trying to be accusing. I'm not. I'm really interested in this. I'd like to know what that is that they have there on that heat exchanger. That would be if for any way you could maybe email whether everybody or just me some of the information on that. I think that would be great. But just dropping right down then to 15.7 on the renewable energy flow battery for use in the grids, kind of the same question. Do you have that battery now? Is it working? Are you trying to improve it? Or are you looking at something new there?
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair and members, the storing renewable energy and flow battery for grid use project, this would be actually the first of its kind demonstration in Minnesota. I think there's some technology that's available and tested throughout the country. And one of the questions is always, how do these batteries operate in cold climates? So this would be the first of its kind demonstration in Minnesota. It's using flow batteries, which are less expensive materials than lithium ion. They need less energy for cooling. They perform better at lower temperatures and can cycle continuously. So this is testing some technology that's out there, but putting it into a Minnesota situation and testing to see how it works.
Well,
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just double up a question there on that one. Then on a lot of things that we put in now, especially with the renewables coming up, no one really has thought ahead as to what happens when we have to dispose of some of the equipment, whether it be the wind turbines or the batteries. Now, these flow batteries, do you have any idea of the half-life of these batteries? And also, Do you have a plan in place for disposal of them when they're done?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, I would have to look into that. I do not have that off the top of my head.
Because, well, there again, too, if you do find that, excuse me, Madam Chair, I'll wait for you.
Representative Green, sorry, I had to call.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I'm trying to hurry. I've only got a couple more questions here. But yeah, I'd love that information, too.
Sure.
The other thing, too, just go right down to 1527. You're looking at ways to stop, bald eagles from running into wind turbines. Is there anything out there that's proven, or is this something else that you're just going to start looking into?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair and members, I think typically, and this is a research project, and we do an additional step with any proposed research projects is we send it out for external peer review. So we're seeking any experts in the field, and it's usually outside of Minnesota so that we're not creating any conflict of interest with people applying for the same funds. But we do send it out for peer review. And one of the goals of research is, you know, at times you're testing theories that are already in place to make sure that they are valid. But for the most part, the goal is to create new knowledge and understanding. And it wouldn't be a good use of the researchers' time or clearly for our funding to just repeat and discover, you know, or, you know, conclude things that we already know. So the idea here is to gather new money and build off of any research that's already been done.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's good to know. That would have been one of my final questions. You just answered that as far as duplication goes, because, you know, even on the money here for pollinators, and we all love pollinators, but I still haven't gotten an answer as to how much money we're spending on them, because it seems like we have money in almost every single area that we're putting into them, and I always worry that those are overlapping. On page 16.3, we're looking at the reuse and repurpose of household goods, recycling, basically. And in this area, I'm wondering, have you done a cost benefit on these projects, or are you just recycling to recycle?
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair and Representative Green, this is actually the second phase of this project. And in the first phase, we did actually provide funding for the Better Futures Minnesota group to team up with the NRRI out of Duluth to do some analysis to find out exactly how much, metric tons of greenhouse gas are we reducing, and how many tons of household material that's going, you know, are we diverting from the landfills? So there are actually some numbers to back this up. And then for this particular project, they believe that this will avert the emission of at least 11 million metric tons of greenhouse gases. And divert approximately 15,000 tons of unused household goods and building materials from going into the landfill.
Representative Green.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. On that same vein then, further down and on page 16, you talk about creating jobs, and do you have an estimate of how many jobs that what you're doing is going to create, and will they be self-sufficient and eventually there's not any more public funds needed for them, and that the program itself will actually carry itself?
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, that's a great question, and I'm just trying to look up. We do have an estimate of how many jobs. This job specifically would fund 13. This project would fund 13 jobs. But this organization is really pretty innovative, and they're doing a lot of different sort of experimenting and testing to figure out how they can make sure that those jobs are, you know, living wages, and also that they are supporting all bunch of small businesses around the state to take advantage of these diverted materials and develop their own markets for them. And so the idea is that eventually this would be self-sustaining. And this is one of those instances where the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is almost serving as some venture capital to give them some funds to figure these things out, work it out, and then hopefully it will be spun off and self-sufficient.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see that there's other questions, so I got two more short ones, and then I'll go off here until we see how much time we have left. But down on page 18, you mentioned a cactus, and it looks like we're spending some money on a cactus that's only supposed to grow in certain places. And I'm wondering, can you tell me a little bit about that, and what's the benefit of this cactus that we're going to spend this kind of money on it?
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, that's a really good question. And I think, this cactus probably serves a specific role in the ecosystem. But I think there's also just that sense of, wow, this is something that was here in a more plentiful way, and it has been dying back. And there's an interest in protecting and preserving what we once had. And so this is a cactus that has only one known remaining population in the state of Minnesota. It's on the Big Stone National Wildlife Refuge, and then it's on two private properties. And so the idea is to move some of the cactus, you know, and bring it actually into the arboretum and figure out how to propagate it. And certainly store that genetic material, and then also hopefully transplant it and get it growing again in these adjacent protected areas, including the Big Stone National Wildlife Refuge, and then perhaps also the Plover Prairie Preserve that's owned by the Nature Conservancy.
Representative Green.
Thank you. And I have one more question, and this one kind of hits close to home to me, and it's that down on the bottom of page 18, where it talks about greening or green schoolyards. I'd like to know a little bit about that. And if you don't have all that information today, that's fine. But I would like to know that because one of the things I worry about with my own grandchildren and also my kids had a lot of allergies, and some were very severe. Some of my grandkids have to carry the pens around with them in case they get into trouble. And I would really like to know what the plans are for the greening of these schoolyards, because it seems like it might be a little risky for a lot of different kids, because I know that my family is not an island here in this area. It seems like allergies are becoming more and more prevalent. And if you have any information on that either today or that you could get me?
Ms. Nash.
Sure, Madam Chair, members. I think the idea of this project is that there's a lot of playgrounds across the state that are probably consist primarily of turf grass and, you know, maybe some, shredded tires and some jungle gyms. And there's a lot of potential in there to do some more, stormwater friendly, some plantings that not only do better for our earth, but also provide some more exposure for the kids who are out there, you know, recreating, to have some exposure with nature. So this is something that the project managers will be working with some healthcare organizations as well as schools. They've got some great partnerships set up, and they would be, it would be a locally driven effort where there's a sort of a whole design process where the kids and the schools are involved. And then in addition to that, Representative Green, I'd be happy to send you some follow-up information after the meeting.
Representative Green, any last?
Just one last comment. I hope that you're really careful on this. We talked about pollinators a little bit too. Anything that you do in the way of this greening stuff that brings even pollinators into schoolyards could be very, very dangerous. And so I hope that you keep your eyes open on that. Probably not going to vote for this bill today. There's always things in these bills that, including the land acquisition, that kind of bothers me, and some of the things I don't think are really well thought out before they're stuck in. But I appreciate your answers, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
All right, next up I see Representative Ackland and then Representative Fisher. Representative Ackland, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a sort of a more general question for Ms. Nash. It seemed like she said that there were 88 projects in this bill. Is that correct?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair, yes, there are.
Okay, and how many applications were there for projects?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair, Representative Ackland, we received 329 applications this year.
Okay, so that brings me to my question, which is if an organization or an entity applies for money from this organization, then, and they're not selected, the next year, do they start over, or is there some sort of lottery system, and do they move up on the list, or how does that work? Because with so many people asking and only maybe a third of them actually receiving the money, I was just wondering, curious how that works, if they have any hope of ever moving to the top in their request.
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair and Representative Ackland, that's a good question. If you apply and you aren't selected the first go round, we as staff encourage people to try again. It depends on what other projects, you know, are submitting applications for. And sometimes it's a project that members need to learn a little bit more about before they're ready to commit, or, you know, maybe you try a couple times and you don't ever, or three times, you don't ever get a recommendation. So it is each year kind of starting fresh. Each project, each proposal competes against all the other proposals.
Representative Ackland?
Thank you, Ms. Nash, and that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, next up I see Representative Fisher and then Representative Ackland. Representative Fisher, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Nash, thank you for the presentation today and for all the work that the folks have done putting together the recommendations. The area I have questions on is I was noticing on page 4, line 10, the geographic atlases for water resource management. I was noticing that this is an appropriation for funding the Part A part. Is this something that is going to complete all of the Part A's throughout the entire state of Minnesota, or is this just part of some of the processes there?
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair and Representative Fisher, this, so the Geologic Atlas for Water Resources, this is Part A to the University of Minnesota. This is the first step in the two-step process of creating the geologic atlases. This appropriation would complete about 8 atlases, and they do combine, you know, they get funding from us as well as Clean Water Fund. So it's those two sources of funding working together. And they're getting towards the end. They have 66 of the 87 counties completed. If they get, you know, about $2 million a year from all the sources, they will be able to start the 87th county in 2025 and finish it in 2029. So the end is in sight there.
Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. That's exactly the information I was looking for is where we are. I know that when this was started years ago, it seemed like it was going to be decades. And thanks to the funding that is coming from the LCCMR, we've been able to move that up. This is very important for us to better understand the hydrology of water across our state because it reacts differently in different parts of the state. And this will help guide the science of how we better manage our water for protection down the road. So I want to say thank you for that continued commitment from the LCCMR. It's still going to take a while to finish that very last one, but I'm glad to see that we're on program that we can see it happen before the decade is over. So thank you so much.
Representative Ackland, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Nash, as always, thanks for the run-through on the bill. I just want a couple comments. Representative Ackland, that was a tremendous question that you had about whether there's priorities or not. I think what happens, as somebody that sat on this committee for a few years now, is that when people come up with a project proposal after a round or two of watching other proposals, they figure out what they have to do to make their proposal strong enough to get noticed, if you want to say. And then the other thing is, once you see it once, you're more apt to remember it the next time around, the next year that Ms. Nash and her staff sends out the four binders or three binders of books that we have of projects that are coming. So, and I just want to remind members also, this is a non-general fund appropriation. Proceeds from the trust fund, and it does a lot of good throughout the entire state of Minnesota. There's a lot of good research. There's a lot of good projects that, whether it's fixing up shorelines or whatever, there's a lot of good projects throughout the whole state that, and a lot of these groups put a lot of effort into getting this project in front of us. Last year, you heard from Ms. Nash, last year we had over 300 proposals, and then we rated them all, and then I'm not sure how it got down to the 80, but we, every year we have a big discussion on how many of those proposals we actually want to see. So I'd urge members to vote for this bill. This is a good bill for the state of Minnesota, and I enjoy working on the committee. Thank you.
Any further questions for members?
Madam Chair.
Chair Hansen.
I think just following up, this was a unanimous recommendation from the LCCMR. And all 17 members voting for this. It's a good package. I would ask for members to support this. It is also a very varied package. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here. And whether it's cactus or pollinators or wind turbine research, the little things matter. And our work in scientific research not only helps us, but sets the groundwork for around the country. And so there's just a range of things in here, whether it's having the solar up on platforms so that cattle could walk underneath it, see if we can do a dual role there, or having the research on COVID and wastewater to see if we can better track and find a way of impacting how the virus is spreading. So those are cutting edge research things. Minnesota has been proud on those. We now will have two LCCMR bills that have gone through the committee, the 2020 and the 2021. I am hopeful that we could pass those individually through the floor and over to the Senate. I would plead, if not beg, the senators to release their hold on the 2020 and the 2021 LCCMR projects so that we could take these as they are and consider them and try to do what's best for the people of Minnesota rather than leveraging them against something else. So this was a unanimous effort. I would ask for your support. The little things do matter. We are all part of this web of life, whether we think of it or not. We may not realize that we're related to the cactus somehow, but somewhere things are connected, and that interconnectedness is something that we as legislators can have an impact on by funding this research and continuing this effort and doing what's best for Minnesota. So I would ask for your support.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 151 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means, and the clerk will take the roll on that motion.
Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, Rick, aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzeman, Josh.
Heintzeman, aye.
Heintzeman, aye. Acom, Patty.
Acom, aye.
Acom, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. She's excused. Ackland, Rob.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, no.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tamara.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. That is 17 ayes and one no.
And with that, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Chair Hansen, any other announcements?
Members, we did receive, there was a small technical correction that we had later than the deadline for the amendments. So we will make that correction in Ways and Means. It's not going to change the impact, but sometimes there are little technical things that we have to fix. So I just wanted to make sure that people were aware of that and that we'll do that in Ways and Means. Maybe Madam Chair, if Mr. Strohmeyer can lay the path for the week ahead.
Strohmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next Thursday, we'll be hearing two bills by Representative Wozlik, and then if there's time to continue the questions from members on the overview of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Next Tuesday, we'll be hearing Representative Hansen's MLEA bill that's been introduced, and we'll also be taking up a bill from Representative Vang on turtles for members that were on last year. That was a bill that was heard a couple years ago. And then the following Thursday, we're still planning the full hearing, but one of the things that will be presented is the Office of Legislative Auditor report on the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Water Gremlin. Whether we have any other items on that day is still to be determined, but that's the road path for the coming week. Thank you.
Anything else on that? All right, don't see any other announcements coming up. So with that, we will adjourn.